Want to make your own podcast? Spotify's got a platform that lets you make one super easy, then distribute it everywhere and even earn money, all in one place for free. It's called Spotify for Podcasters. Here's how it works. Spotify for Podcasters lets you record and edit podcasts right from your phone or computer. So no matter what your setup is like, you can start creating today. Then you can distribute your podcast to Spotify and everywhere else podcasts are heard. Video podcasts are also available on Spotify. With Spotify for Podcasters, you can earn money in a variety of ways, including ads and podcast subscriptions. And best of all, it's totally free with no catch. Ever since I discovered Spotify for Podcasters, I feel like I have an outlet for the creativity and ideas I want to share with the world. I recommend you give it a try. We all have a voice, so share it with the world. Download the Spotify for Podcasters app, or go to spotify.com/podcasters to get started today. God became like a little child in a lowly place to become a servant to all. And just what incredible love he has to come into the world in that way, in such a humble way, for our sake, but also, as we've talked about, to reverse the sin of the rebellious angels. You know, it's not just about providing salvation to us, the opportunity for salvation, but it's undoing the works of the devil and his angels and demons. Welcome to the Days of Noah podcast, where we talk all things biblical, supernatural, and strange. We have a special episode this week where Luke and I talk about the different theories for when the Messiah was born. When did Jesus come into the earth as a little baby? And there's really a lot of conjecture, speculation, but also a lot of interesting factoids and just different rabbit trails you can go down to see how can we piece this together and figure it out. But most importantly is celebrating the birth of our Creator coming into the world as a little child to redeem us and the world. Welcome back to the Days of Noah podcast, and we're going to go over Jesus' birth, the timing of it, and why it matters, and kind of the popular theories for that. So in some ways, I think it doesn't matter. It's more about our desire to celebrate the love of God that he came to earth for us than what actual day it occurred. But as is often the case in God's plans and words and prophecies, you know, there's layers of significance to when the actual birth occurred. So we'll kind of look at that kind of stuff and see how it fits in. So the three possible time frames that I've been seeing are, of course, December 25th or thereabouts. And then late summer, early fall, so September time frame, and then also spring. And I found it interesting as I was looking some of this stuff up that some of the early church fathers thought it was very pagan-like and even sinful to be concerned with the birth of the Messiah and the timing of it and celebrating it, because that was, I guess culturally, that was not the norm. You know, we're very used to that today, but I guess that was not the norm back then. And so you have Clement was one, and Origen, if you've heard of him, he said it was like calling Jesus something like a King Pharaoh. So they thought of that idea very pagan. It's kind of interesting. So some of the go ahead.
So what have you read on why was December 25th settled on, and when was it settled on? Did you find any of that information out?
I did, and perfect question, because that's where I was going next. So some possible reasons. So there isn't, from what I found, there isn't anything really like finite, definite, for sure, that it was one influence, but it was kind of amalgamation of multiple things. So for the first couple hundred years after Christ, it really wasn't an issue. It really wasn't talked about, celebrated. There's nothing in the writings about it. It doesn't show up until about the 3rd century is the earliest, and then gained more popularity around the 4th century. So some of the possible reasons for December 25th, one of them is to replace the worship of the Roman sun god, which coincided with the winter solstice. So there's this idea of, you know, the darkest day of the year is right before the solstice, or on the solstice, I guess. And then there's like a rebirth of the sun, because the days are getting longer after that. And sun god worship, of course, was very common in ancient pagan times. And so there's a Latin, I think it's Latin phrase, sol invictus, which is the invincible sun. Or put another way, in Rome, they had the Feast of the Unquenchable Sun. And so this was around or on December 25th. So that's one possible theory as to why Christmas was kind of Christianized. Possibly the Roman Catholic Church kind of said, okay, people are already celebrating the Roman sun god. Let's Christianize it and make it about Jesus. So that's one kind of pagan idea. But surprisingly, so I kind of knew a little bit about that, that there was pagan roots to it. But what I didn't know is there is actually some Christian beliefs that they believe it actually was December 25th for his birthday. So there's this guy, Hippolytus. And there's a lot of controversy to Hippolytus, because some say he contradicts himself in his writing. In one section, he says Jesus was born on December 25th, and then another section, it says he was born in April. So some have suggested, like Jonathan Kahn, that maybe it was redacted, like someone kind of tried to scrub one part of it, but they didn't scrub the other part. I don't know. That gets into some controversy, but basically, there was this idea that Jesus was conceived on the vernal equinox, which would be the first day of spring, which would make his birth about December 25th. And this isn't just limited to Hippolytus. This was kind of, I guess, a common belief that that people of the time thought that the creation of the world began on March 25th or thereabouts with the beginning of spring, because that's the beginning of all things. And so they kind of married that idea of Jesus' conception, having that in common with the conception of creation. And then later in, like, I think the 3rd and 4th century, Tertullian and Augustine supported that view, and partially because, so there's what's called the Feast of Annunciation, and that's when the angel appeared to Mary. So annunciation, I guess, is the root word is announcement. So that's when the angel announced to Mary she would be pregnant. So there was a belief that that happened on about March 25th, and therefore she would have given birth in December. So that's kind of the Christian background, non-pagan background, of why they think it's in December. And then the third reason I found kind of goes back to some more pagan stuff. It's said to correspond to the timing of Saturnalia, which was a 6 or 7 day celebration from December 17th to the 23rd. And that involved gift giving and other festivities. So that's probably where we have the tradition of gift giving at Christmas, is probably tied to that. And Saturnalia was celebrating the rule of Saturn and as the mother, and Jupiter as the father, who were imagined to have reigned in a mythic time of infinite pleasure, peace, and harmony called the Golden Age. And of course, we've heard a lot of talk about that on Blurry Creatures, right? About this so-called Golden Age where, you know,
the guys to Atlantis and stuff.
Atlantis, the time of the Watchers and giants ruling, all right. of that, right? Yeah. So that's kind of the three big themes that I found for December 25th. But why not December 25th? Why doesn't it work? So this is, I learned this from Jonathan Kahn, the Christian rabbi. And if anyone hasn't heard of him, he's got some fantastic books out there. His bestseller he came out with almost a couple decades ago, The Harbinger, is really fascinating about the tie-ins to Isaiah chapter, I think it's 9 or 10. I think it's 9. When Israel was being attacked by the Assyrians and all of the similarities to 9/11 and the Twin Towers falling and all of that. It's really, really interesting. Anyway, so he says that the lambing season, when sheep would give birth, always happens in the spring. And because of that, that's why the shepherds would have been out with their flocks at night, like the Bible says they were when the angel appeared to them. So they would have been out kind of awaiting the lambs being born. They would have been there to protect them from predators. And then one kind of interesting thing to note, too, is Bethlehem is actually the place where sheep were bred for sacrifice to be used in the temple. So it would be very fitting if the Lamb of God would be born in the same area that was used for lambs for temple sacrifice. That's kind of cool, isn't it?
Yeah, that's interesting.
So another thought to why not December 25th. Some people have said, well, even in that area of the world, winter would have been too cold for shepherds to be out with their flocks at night. Some have disagreed with that, but that's one possible idea. And then there is a book called Born in Bethlehem by William Ramsey, and he talks about the timing of the census. You know, because if you remember in the accounts, like in Luke, it says, you know, the Caesar wanted everyone to be registered in a census, and so everyone had to go to their hometowns. And in his book, he says the general time of year for that was typically August to October to encourage higher participation because, you know, winter would be too cold and early spring would be kind of, I guess, the rainy season. So it'd be unlikely to be in winter, unlikely to be in spring, according to him. So that's just kind of one reason why. Joseph and Mary wouldn't have been traveling during the winter. And then another thought about, I guess this coincides with the idea that Jesus was born in spring, is the Feast of Tabernacles, which is in early fall, like September. Jonathan Kahn says, well, Mary and Joseph would not have broken the Jewish law of observing that. So they would have been in Jerusalem during that time, not in Bethlehem. So that's where one of the reasons he leans towards the spring. So then there's some other thoughts from Kahn on the timing of things. So one thing he says is the spiritual meaning of the Feast of Tabernacles lines up with end times and a closing of an era, not the opening or beginning of an era. And so according to him, Messiah's birth, death, resurrection, second coming must come in a proper chronological order. And he says Tabernacles is all about the closing of the age. So that would be the wrong order to have his birth then. And then, yeah, we already mentioned about Jesus being born in Bethlehem, not Jerusalem. And Kahn says, it would have caused revolution to require travel for the census at a time when Jews were supposed to be in Jerusalem. So that's an interesting thought. He goes on to say that according to Exodus, the Passover lambs were sacrificed at 1 year old, which if Jesus' birth coincides with this, he would have been born 1 year earlier in the spring. So it kind of lines up to that. And then in Exodus 12:6, it says the lamb was to stay with the family that raised it until, or maybe, I don't know if they actually raised it, maybe there were certain shepherds that raised them, and then they, the families that were going to sacrifice, maybe they purchased them or something. But anyway, the lambs were to stay with the family until the sacrifice. And if you count back from Passover, the day that the lamb was beginning to stay with the families, this would have coincided with Palm Sunday. So Kahn points out it's really interesting how you have Jesus coming into the city on Palm Sunday being worshipped the same number of days before he died, before Passover, as in Exodus when the lambs were awaiting sacrifice and they went into the family's homes. So that's kind of neat. Kind of neat coincision? Is that a word? Yeah, and then in the Hebrew calendar, so I might touch on this later, but I found that there's apparently like two different calendars. So in old times, the beginning of the Hebrew calendar was in the fall, and then it kind of switched to the spring with the month of Nisan, which means beginning. And then a little bit about kind of the Magi. So Daniel, if you remember, he was in Babylon. He was like one of the chief astrologers. And so the Magi that sought the Jewish king, Messiah, they may have been familiar with Daniel's timeline. Because remember, Daniel gives that, what is it, like 470 years, I think? Does that sound right? He gives a time.
That number doesn't. The only timeline that's popping in my head dealing with Daniel, I thought it was 70 generations.
70 generations? So maybe that's where they get that 470 or 490 years, something like
that. Unless there's some multiplication going on there and it brings it up to 470, I don't know.
Yeah, if they're saying a generation is like 70 years or something. Anyway, so I think there's like a idea of a countdown to the Messiah. So the Magi.
You're getting into it. Mm-hmm. So there definitely was a countdown. There definitely was prophecy in the prophets, you know.
Yep.
That they were seeing the signs leading up. Plus, they were looking at the stars. They were looking at all the evidence. Right.
Yeah.
The Magi. Is the Magi the wise men?
The wise men. Yep. Yeah, exactly. And that's how it's described with Daniel. It says he was chief among the wise men. So that's that connection to being one of the Magi, very skilled in astrology, which in that time was what we call astronomy. It was basically, you know, being a student of the science of the stars and stuff. So they may have been familiar with that. And then there was also a convergence of the wandering stars, which are I guess they're the ones that you can, they're actually the planets, but you can see them with the naked eye. So back then, the wandering stars were Jupiter, Mars, Saturn, Venus, Mercury, and then also the sun and moon were considered part of that. And so again, this is according to Kahn, this convergence of these stars happened around 6 BC, and Jupiter was thought of as the king star, and then there was Regulus, which was kind of the royal star, and according to the Greek astronomer Ptolemy, Judea was associated with the constellation Aries, which is the ram. So that kind of would have been that, like, lamb language, right? So we've got king, royalty, lamb. And apparently this convergence only happens every 6,000 years. So according to Khan, this convergence, the Magi would have been paying attention to this. And it happened in the spring of 6 BC. So that's all these reasons why he points to the actual birth date of Christ being in spring. And then we get into a huge clue that could either be spring or fall for Jesus' birth, and it has to do with John the Baptist's parents. So do you recall that, like, I think there's a 6-month difference between John the Baptist and Jesus' age? Like, John the Baptist was six months older? Okay. So
yeah. Which is recorded in the Gospels.
It is. Yep. So this gets into so Zechariah was one of the priests that served in the temple. And if we go to 1 Chronicles 24, there were divisions of the descendants of the sons of Aaron. And so what they did is they separated these priests into divisions for their appointed order of ministering. And so David helped with this, and they cast lots. And based on the order that the lot fell, then it was these divisions that were to serve in the temple in this order. Okay? So why is that significant? Because you get to the 8th one, and it's the lot fell to Abiah or Abijah. And then in verse 19 of Chronicles, it says, this was their appointed order of ministering when they entered the temple of the Lord. Okay, so fast forward to Luke 1:5, the birth of John the Baptist foretold. In the time of King Herod of Judea, there was a priest named Zechariah who belonged to the priestly division of Abiah or Abijah. Okay, so he's number 8 in order. That's his group that he serves with. And his wife Elizabeth was also a descendant of Aaron. So one thing to note, too, is that there are a few kind of feast Sabbaths, I guess. I believe there's 3 throughout the year where all 24 divisions, so there were 24 total, would participate and serve together. So it's not like you can just go through the year week after week and say, okay, this is when Zechariah would have served. So there was a couple feast weeks in there where they would all serve. So then Luke 1:8. Once when Zechariah's division was on duty and he was serving as priest before God, he was chosen by lot according to the custom of the priesthood to go into the temple and burn incense. And then that's the verses that follows is when the angel shows up and says his wife's going to have a child. And of course, he scoffs at it, right? And what happens? He gets like made deaf and dumb or something like that, right? He can't speak.
That's right. Due to his unbelief.
Yep. And then fast forward to verse 23. When his time of service was completed, he returned home. After this, his wife Elizabeth became pregnant and for 5 months remained in seclusion. So kind of if we can figure out when he served in the temple, then it was shortly thereafter, probably the next week or two at the most, that Elizabeth conceived. So if we can figure out when he served, we can figure out when John the Baptist would have been born, and then we can figure out when Jesus would be born.
Welcome to the Lost Roman Heroes podcast. My name is Matthew.
And my name is Matteo.
We are serious nerds for Rome, and we are father and son.
Together on the Lost Roman Heroes podcast, we dive deep into the history of Rome, from its origin story starring Aeneas of Troy to its death with Constantine the 11th, uncovering Rome's greatest heroes along the way and ranking them.
There are plenty of great podcasts on the big men in Rome's history, guys like Caesar, Augustus, and Constantine, but that's not us. We're making this podcast to shed a light on Rome's forgotten heroes. From Cincinnatus to Scipio, from Aurelian to Belisarius and beyond, you will not believe the gems that we uncover. So please come join the Legion of Lost Roman Heroes and listen to us wherever you get your favorite podcasts, iTunes, Podbean, Spotify, or find us at www.lostromanheroes.com.
Well, one thing that I'm thinking of that would be interesting to look at. So he was in the temple serving, and maybe this is what you're getting at. I don't know that it really says in what capacity, or was it a special, was it close to a feast day? Was it close to something significant in the temple rituals? So obviously there's appointed feasts that God commanded Moses to adhere to.
Right.
And I'm wondering if Zechariah was ministering in the temple close to one of those particular feasts. Because the argument about, you know, being in the spring, there's a lot of different viewpoints on that, as you've already named. But if we, I don't know that the scripture really says in the Gospels that Zechariah was in the temple during a certain feast day. Because that would be a huge clue if it was.
I agree. That's a very good point because was this his normal rotation, or was this all hands on deck on a feast day?
Was there a special holiday going on in the temple?
Yep.
Certain feast.
Yeah. I don't know.
Which would kind of give us an idea. Is it a spring feast, a fall feast?
Exactly.
You know,
yep.
What was going on?
Yeah, that's a good point. I think we'd have to see if there's any clues in Scripture as to if we can deduce that was going on, or if this was kind of his regular service. But yeah, let's put a pin in it, as they say, and come back to that at some point. I think that'd be interesting to look at. Okay, so then. In the 6 months, so then this is same chapter of Luke, verse 26, the birth of Jesus foretold. In the 6 months of Elizabeth's pregnancy, God sent the angel Gabriel to Nazareth, a town in Galilee, to a virgin pledged to be married to a man named Joseph. Of course, that's Mary. And in verse 36, the angel says, even Elizabeth, your relative, is going to have a child in her old age. And she who is said to be unable to conceive is in her 6th month. So we don't know exactly when Mary would have conceived after this announcement. Could have been the same day. Could have been shortly thereafter. But assuming it's right around that time, then you have that's where we get that 6 month age difference between John and Jesus. Okay, so some clues to when did Zechariah serve? And there's a lot of different timelines that can give very different answers. So it's really hard to pinpoint. But here are some things from Jonathan Kahn again. Okay, so in the Dead Sea Scrolls that were found in, what, the 40s? 1940s? There is a calendar in it that has the calendar of this priestly service. And it says that the yearly service begins on the first day of spring. So that's like companies have a fiscal year, right, that doesn't coincide with, you know, January to December. Their yearly service begins on Nisan 1, or Aviv is the month, the season of spring. And then another source is in the Talmud. And it says the beginning of the priestly duties would have begun on the Sabbath of one Aviv, which is spring, the first day of spring. And they record, again, as we know, the temple was destroyed in 70 AD. Well, they say that was on a Sunday. They also record the division of priests who were serving at that time. So Khan's point is you can look at the Dead Sea Scrolls and count forward. You can look at the Jewish Talmud and count backward and figure out when the division of Abijah would have been serving. And he says that leads to Messiah being born on March 20th, 6 BC. And he says both the Dead Sea Scrolls and the Talmud arrive at the same date if you count backwards and forwards to that. So that's pretty interesting. Well, here's where it gets a little tricky. So once again, if so there's 24 divisions of priests, right? So basically, they each have to serve twice a year plus the feast days. So it's about five or six times a year. So if Zacharias served in the second rotation of the year, near the time of his wife conceiving, this would have been around November, December, and 6 months afterward, about May, June, Jesus would have been conceived, which makes Jesus' birth in early spring, as we've been saying. But if Zacharias served in May, June, in the first rotation of the year, because remember, they start in March, and he was the eighth one, and I believe there are two feast weeks or days in that, so it actually would have been about the 10th week of the year, starting in March. So that would have put his service in May or June. Then Elizabeth would have conceived him around this time. 6 months later, around November, December, Mary would have conceived, which would have Jesus been born, having Jesus being born around September. So there we get really dependent on the service of the division of Abijah if Jesus was born in spring or September. So here's another clue in the Old Testament that Khan brings up. He says, when the tabernacle was being built, it took 9 months to build it, same as the gestation of a baby. And in Exodus 41 and 2, it says, in the first month, Nisan, the first day, it was complete. So it was completed on the first day of spring. And of course, that's symbolic of everything becoming new. Just as Jesus says, I'm going to make all things new and bring the new covenant. So according to Khan, that seems to all fit. And of course, that ties in with John 1:14, the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. Some versions say tabernacled among us. So this idea of Jesus coming into the world, being conceived on the same day that the tabernacle would have been complete. So there would have been that tie-in. All right, so again, spring or fall. So we already talked about the lambing season is always in the spring. That's when the shepherds would have been out there. We already talked about the census being unlikely to be in winter. So we've already kind of gone over that stuff. So that's kind of why it's not in the winter, probably, and the reasons for the spring and possibly fall. And then we can get into some of the kind of astral prophecy that goes with Jonathan Cahn mentioned some of that stuff we already talked about with the Magi. But Michael Heiser references this guy, Martin. So you've probably heard maybe a little bit about Michael Heiser's interpretation of Revelation 12, where John is talking about the constellations and how this points to the timing of Jesus' birth. Are you familiar with that at all?
If I did, I probably forgot it.
Yeah.
It's not on the forefront of my brain.
It's kind of convoluted how he... Well, it's simple once you grasp it, but it's hard to kind of put it into perspective. So one thing to think about, too, with astral prophecy or astral theology is kind of this idea that... That the heavens Well, let's just go back to Genesis. So there's the theme that signs in the heavens mark important points in history, just like the second coming of Christ. There's talk about that in the Bible. So in Genesis, God explains his purpose, one of the purposes for creating those lights in the universe. He said, Genesis 1:14, let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven to divide the day and night. Let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and years. So that's one of the purposes of the stars and the lights in the skies, is for signs. And then in Psalm 19, it talks about God's creations declaring his glory and showing his handiwork. So again, we're going to get into kind of Michael Heiser's perspective, where he gets a lot of his ideas from Ernest Martin's book, which is called The Star That Astonished the World, making his case that what was in the heavens in Revelation 12 may be what the Magi would have seen. And so from his perspective, here's another kind of interesting side note too, is in Michael Heiser's book, Reversing Hermann, which is about undoing the damage of the sin of the watchers in Genesis 6, he ties that into the timing of Jesus' birth and how it actually coincides with reversing Hermann. So that's kind of interesting. We'll get into that a little later. So some critics of this view that Ernest Martin's book and Michael Heiser agrees with say, well, this couldn't have been the timing because Josephus, the historian, puts Herod's death at 4 BC. And so the timeline that we're going to get into doesn't work with that. But according to Heiser, and he has documents to show this, there were different dating systems that can be used that would actually establish a 1 BC death for Herod. So that's kind of when we get into what Revelation 12 points to in terms of timing. He says it can work with the timing of Herod's death, because I guess Herod's death happened 2 years after Jesus being born, something like that.
And that's when he came back from Egypt back into Israel.
Yes, yes. And it was a couple years after, too, that the Magi finally showed up, right? Jesus was like 2 years old, I think.
The Magi? Yeah. That's the wise men.
The wise men, yeah. They didn't, just like our nativity scene displays show the wise men there, they weren't there then. They came way after the fact.
Maybe I'm not remembering the gospel correctly, because I thought they came just around the same time that the shepherds did, and they brought the frankincense.
Yeah, the gifts.
Yeah, the gifts.
Well, from my understanding, they didn't get there till much later when Jesus was older. But I'd have to double check the scripture on that. So we'll come back to that, I guess. All right. So then, also another point too is the Magi would have been familiar with Isaiah 7:14 about the virgin giving birth. And so there's the constellation Virgo in the sky. So that's one of the things the Magi would have been looking for. All right, so getting into Revelation 12. So we already talked about Psalm 19, the heavens declare the glory of God, the sky proclaims his handiwork. So Heiser kind of makes the point, like in 19:4, their voice goes out through all the earth and their words to the end of the world. So he kind of ties this into Paul saying that the creation of the world makes it plain to all. So it's kind of this prophetic voice of creation of Jesus, hearkening back to Psalm 19. And then, so let's read Revelation 12. And a great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and on her head a crown of 12 stars. So the constellation Virgo, I guess, has 12 stars around it. She was pregnant and crying out in birth pains and the agony of giving birth. And another sign appeared in heaven. Behold, a great red dragon with 7 heads and 10 horns, and on his head 7 diadems, which I think are crowns, right? His tail, his tail swept down a third of the stars of heaven and cast them to the earth. So right there, again, there's a lot of language in the Bible about stars being equated with actual gods, actual angelic, divine beings, however you want to call it. And then just a quick sidebar before I keep reading. So one of our earlier podcasts, we were talking about my coworker's position on Job 38, when it says at the time of creation, the morning stars sang and the stars shouted for joy, or I'm sorry, the sons of God shouted for joy. And he was trying to make the point that, look, these are stars. Well, Doug Van Dorn in Blurry Creatures 137 episode says, this is classic Hebrew parallelism, where they use two different words to describe the same kind of thing. So in that sentence, it says, the morning stars sang for joy, and the sons of God shouted. And so it's not two different things. It's not stars like lights in the heavens and then angels. It's actually angels and angels, because that's the kind of the literary device of Hebrew parallelism. So just to make that point to say that, you know, there's a lot of language in the Bible, even besides Revelation, where stars are thought of as actual beings. All right, so going back to Revelation 12, his tail swept down a third of the stars of heaven and cast them to the earth. So again, this is the only place in the Bible where we get this idea that the dragon, Satan, took a third of the angels with him. There's nowhere else in the Bible that we get this idea. It's largely tradition in Christianity where we think Satan's fall had a third of the angels rebelling with him. But if Revelation 12 is, as Dr. Heiser points out, talking about the timing of the birth of the Messiah, well, then this third of the angels coming with him didn't happen millennia ago. It happened at the time of Jesus' birth. So just a little sidebar there. And the dragon stood before the woman who was about to give birth, so that when she bore her child, he might devour it. She gave birth to a male child, one who is to rule the nations with a rod of iron. So that language right there goes back to, I think, Isaiah, where it's talked about the coming Messiah ruling with a rod of iron. So this is clearly messianic timeline here. But her child was caught up to God and to his throne. And the woman fled into the wilderness, where she had a place prepared by God, in which she is to be nourished for 1260 days. Okay, so what's happening there? Let's unpack that. So there's a combination of astronomical constellation signs in the sky. So you have the woman, Virgo, the sun in her midst, the moon at her feet, the dragon. So one point, and I'm quoting from Mike Heiser's podcast. So this particular collection of constellations is not especially rare by itself, but there are other celestial things going on that are not mentioned by John in Revelation 12 that when you combine them, make this a very rare event. And they would have been present during the time of Jesus' birth. So, one of the things we talked about earlier is how the constellations were thought of. So, there was Leo, which was associated by the Jews with royalty. And then we have a quote from Hastings' Encyclopedia of Religion and Ethics. And he says, if you read through their Sun, Moon, and Stars article, you'll find that Leo was considered a royal constellation since it was dominated by the star Regulus. And Regulus would have also been in the picture of the circumstances of Revelation 12. So the star Regulus was known by the astrologers as the King Star. I guess it was the biggest and brightest in the constellation Leo. Okay, and then going back to Ernest Martin's book, The Star of Bethlehem, The Star That Astonished the World. So here's a quote from him. The only time in the year that the sun could be in a position to clothe the celestial woman Virgo, that is to be mid-bodied to her in the region where a pregnant woman carries a child, is when the sun is located between 150 and 170 degrees along the ecliptic. This clothing of the woman by the sun occurs for a 20-day period each year. This 20-degree spread could have indicated the general time when Jesus was born, in 3 BC. The sun would have entered this celestial region on August 27th and exited about September 15th. If John in the book of Revelation is associating the birth of Jesus with the period of the sun being mid-bodied to the woman called Virgo, then Jesus would have been born within that 20-day period. And from the point of view of the Magi, this would have been the only logical sign under which the Jewish Messiah would have been born, especially if he were born of a virgin. And going on, the sign of the sun clothing the woman defines a period of 20 days, and then you add the additional sign of the moon being under her feet, which pinpoints the nativity to within a day, and actually to within 90 minutes of that day. So this is Heiser here. In the year 3 BC, these two relationships of the sun, moon, and Virgo came into alignments for only 81 minutes. And would have been observed from Palestine in the twilight period of September 11th, 3 BC. This relationship began about 6:18 p.m. sunset and lasted until 7:39 p.m. moonset. So it should be noted, he says, that this is the only day in the whole year, September 11th, 3 BC, that this astronomical phenomenon described in Revelation 12 could have taken place.
Very interesting.
Yes. So it's kind of like if you've ever listened to one person's opinion and then you're like, oh, he's absolutely right. And then you hear somebody else and you're like, oh, no, this guy's right. It's like whichever argument you hear last seems to be the one that's true. So I was, like I was saying to you last time we talked, I was absolutely convinced by Mike Heiser's argument in Revelation 12 for years until I heard Jonathan Cahn's argument. So I don't know what to think, but there's a lot of good a lot of good reasons for either one. And I was surprised to hear, as I listened to it several times, Cahn's talk on it, that he has some astrological things that he say point to 6 BC and the spring. So not 3 BC in the fall. So one other thing, too, that's really interesting, and, of course, we're going to have to get Reversing Hermann sometime. I think that would be a excellent read from Mike Heiser. But he connects this idea of the Messiah's coming in the fall with undoing the sin of the watchers. And so he's got, like, I think a whole chapter on in his book that talks about that. So here's a quote from this person's Gaster's Festivals of the Jewish New Year. Although it might sound odd, there is a tradition that the world would have began, so Eden, you know, with the fruit already ripe on the trees, would have linked to Tishri 1, which is September 11th, that creation, or I'm sorry, not creation, but the Garden of Eden, when Adam and Eve were there, would have been in the fall, because that's when things would have been ripe. And so he's connecting it to this idea that that Jesus would have come at that same time. Because part of the what he's coming to do is to undo the damage of the Watchers. So again, this is where you have the new year beginning in the fall in the original calendar, and then later on it gets changed to align to Passover, where we have spring being the beginning of the Hebrew New Year. So Heiser says Genesis has Adam and Eve placed in a lush garden, availability of food, it must have been in harvest season, and this is how the Jews would have reasoned this. And so that's why back then they would have had their calendar beginning in the fall. And so why is that important? Well, Jewish tradition took the chronology of Noah's birthday to be Tishri 1, the first month of the fall. And so they kind of connect this idea that Jesus was the better Noah. Like, as the time of Noah, these awful beings were wiped out, and here is the better Noah coming, the Messiah, to kind of finish the job. So here's another little interesting detail about that, too. So the second month of the year, the month when Noah and his family emerged from the ark after the flood, was marked astronomically by the appearance of the Pleiades constellation. So this is from an article by Robbins. The stars rising is a phenomenon where the star is first visible on the in the morning sky. On this day, a star will only briefly appear and be barely visible, since if you had looked a day earlier, it was too close to the sun for visibility. And Heiser says this comes from an astronomical page from the University of Maryland. Okay, so then in the Hebrew term for the Pleiades constellation is called Kima, and it's mentioned three times in the Old Testament, and it's always paired with Orion. And, of course, we know Orion to be connected to Nimrod, Apollo, the Antichrist, right? Since its position in the sky is close to the Orion constellation. Not surprisingly, Orion was considered a giant in the ancient world. Remember, Nimrod began to be a Gibeorim. And the last reference is significant in light of the Dead Sea Scrolls. In one Targum of Job, Targum is a Aramaic translation, discovered at Qumran, the Dead Sea Scrolls, Job 38:31 reads, "Can you bind the chains of the Pleiades, Kima, or loose the cords of Orion?" But instead of Kesel for Orion, the Aramaic has the word Nephila. Now, what does that sound like?
Nephilim.
Nephilim. The last term Aramaic for Orion is the Aramaic noun from which Nephilim derives. And and Tizer talks about this in The Unseen Realm. Nephila is giant. So then he gets in a little bit about the Apkallu from Mesopotamia, which is the context for Genesis 1:6-4. The Apkallu were before the flood fully divine, after the flood divine and human mixed. And he says that's kind of the pagan reference for what Genesis 6:4 and the Book of Enoch is all talking about. And yeah, so this idea that that the Messiah was going to be the ultimate Noah. So that's another reason why he kind of ties it into the fall date, because it was thought that Noah was born at that time. So that's about all I got on that.
Very interesting.
Yeah. So lots to ponder and look into. Like you said about the whether Zechariah was serving on one of those feast days that might have changed the timing of his service.
It doesn't really say. I was browsing Luke while you were speaking, and it just makes mention that Zechariah and Elizabeth were righteous, that he was serving during the time of infants, incense. So I think the time of incense was a daily tradition or habit that they were directed by God, you know, and Moses to do. So it doesn't really tie in exactly to a certain feast per se, that I can see in that scripture.
Okay. So it might have been just his normal service.
Right.
Yeah.
But you made a point that there might have been several. Like, he wouldn't have to serve every day. There probably had a pool of people. I think the tribe of the Levites were the main ones that were serving in the temple. And I'm sure they rotated on their assignments.
Yep. Yeah, I think it might have been a week-long service. And then, then not again for 24 weeks, plus any feast days would have delayed the next time of service too.
Right.
So,
and then it says in verse 26 of chapter 1 of Luke, it's in that that's when Gabriel went to see Mary, and you know, I think many believe that it wasn't short after that proclamation that the conception took place. So that's where they're getting the 6 month difference in time between Elizabeth being pregnant with John the Baptist and Mary being pregnant with Jesus.
Okay, that makes sense. I'm gonna just look up real quick, since we mentioned the question, when did the wise men visit the infant Jesus? See if I can find an article here. Let's see here. Oh, Answers in Genesis. We Three Kings, Answers in Genesis. Answers in Genesis is a good one. That's Ken Ham, I think, right? He's got the ark display.
Oh, Ham?
Yeah. The book of Matthew contains the account of the wise men. Now, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod, behold, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, saying, "Where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For he has seen his star in the east and have come to worship him." Here's one other clue. How did they learn of the king of the Jews? Some scholars believe the book of Numbers informed the Magi of the child who would be preceded by a star. Numbers 24:17. "I see him, but not now. I behold him, but not near. A star shall come out of Jacob, a scepter shall rise out of Israel." Perhaps they were told in a dream about the Messiah's birth. After all, God warned them in a dream not to return to Herod after they had seen the baby Jesus.
Which gospel is that?
Matthew. Matthew 2:12 is where they were warned not to go back, because Herod knew that they knew. Let's see here. How many Magi came to see Jesus? We always say three, you know, we three kings. Well, we kind of base that on the gifts, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. So that's tradition, but the Bible doesn't really tell us. There may have been many more. Okay, here we go. When and where did they see the Lord Jesus Christ? Nativity story, of course, it shows him that he was there on the night of his birth, but this is highly unlikely. Matthew 2:1 reveals the Magi came to Jerusalem and subsequently visited with Herod after Jesus would have been born. So there's a lot of traveling time going on there. The angelic announcement of Christ's birth to the shepherds was at night, which means Jesus was born at night. In Luke 2:11, the angel told the shepherds, "For there is born to you this day in the city of David a Savior, who is Christ the Lord." Let's see here. The Jewish day began at sundown. Then the angelic use of the word day, which is Semaron, indicates Christ was born at night. So it is highly implausible that the wise men would have arrived in Jerusalem at night and immediately obtained an audience with Herod. The king then gathered all the chief priests and scribes of the people, Matthew 2:4, so he could determine where the Messiah was to be born. The experts told Herod that the Messiah needed to be born in Bethlehem, which was predicted in Micah 5:2. So the wise men departed and made their six-mile journey to Bethlehem. If we assume the wise men met with Herod during the day after Jesus was born, the earliest they could have visited him would have been the next night. So I've heard other things about it being a couple years after, but this is
venture to guess it wouldn't be long after. And part of that is in verse 10, when they saw the star, they rejoiced with exceedingly great joy. So, and that they were observing that star before they had come to see the young child, Jesus. So, and I thought this, unless the star lingered for months, but they saw Herod, they saw that they were gathering that information from the scriptures. They're looking up into the heavens. They were excited when they saw the star and met with King Herod. And obviously he was being deceitful in his desire to worship the child too. Then they go see the child. And then Joseph is warned to flee due to Herod's wrath. And Herod's wrath coincide with the Magi, the wise men, being warned, right?
Mm-hmm.
To not go back to Herod and report in, but go back a different way.
Right.
And that's when Herod sent out the decree, right, to kill the male child 2 years old and younger.
Maybe that's where people get that two-year idea that it could have been 2 years later because of this. If he's decreeing it's 2 years, Herod is saying, well, he could be up to 2 years old already, this child that is a threat to me.
Yeah, because he didn't know, not like the Magi did. They had all the facts.
Right.
I got a feeling that they saw him within a matter of days, weeks, at most months of Jesus's birth. Because I got a feeling that when Joseph fled with his family to Egypt, I think they stayed there a little while.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, no, that's very plausible, and especially from the article we just looked at, that's plausible. It could have been right. much sooner than I guess I've thought too. So yeah, interesting stuff. So I think that's a good place to yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was just gonna add something that Pastor Doug Riggs chimed in about the timing of December 25th, his opinion, and he didn't elaborate on, at least in this one interview, on why he thought Christ was born on a different day than the 25th.
Okay.
But he did make mention that the 25th of December, is Nimrod's birthday.
Oh,
so that would be another pagan, celebration day, which is kind of interesting. And his point was, it doesn't matter exactly when, we celebrate the day. It's just the fact that we do celebrate his arrival, you know, the prophecy being fulfilled of him coming as the Son of Man, but yet fully God.
Yes. Yeah, and it's interesting that some of the early church fathers thought it was very pagan to celebrate Jesus' birth, even him being Jesus, because what does the angel say? You know, I bring you tidings of great joy, which shall be for all people. So if it was not a big deal, if you want to make the idea that that's pagan or Or, no, we should just celebrate his death and resurrection and his teachings, not his birth. It's like, well, the angel thought it was it was a joyful announcement, you know? So,
yeah, definitely a joyful announcement when he made his appearance. And, you know, it was joyful to Mary. It was joyful to Elizabeth and even John the Baptist when the two cousins are meeting, pregnant cousins, that is, you know. What does it say? It says that John the Baptist was filled with the Holy Ghost even in his mother's womb. And
he,
you know,
and he
it was
jumped.
Like the, it
he
was
jumped.
The infant, yes, the infant had an emotional response to what was taking place and the conversation that was taking place.
And the proximity to the Messiah growing inside of Mary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
fascinating.
Kind of wild.
Fascinating.
That a child can be, influence in that positive way. So
well,
that's pretty cool.
And that's something too, as you know, I've gone through adoption, that process, and learning a lot about how even in utero, the developing babies can feel the stress of the mother, the emotions of the mother, all this stuff they can sense and pick up on. So there's a lot of science behind that too. So pretty cool. All right. Well, I guess that's a good place to wrap up. So, and we're at about an hour anyway, so that's perfect. And hopefully we can get Don back here for next time, and we can go over Wandering Stars with Doug Van Dorn, Blurry Creature episode 137, where he does touch on some of this Revelation 12 stuff, but he gets into a lot of kind of how the, I guess one of the themes of the show is kind of this counterfeit of God, of using the stars and astrology and how these ancient cities were built in accordance to these constellations because they were trying to worship and connect to these gods. And so that idea of counterfeit knowledge, not that it's untrue, but that God says, don't mess with that because I'm the true king. I'm the real deal. And these are just poor substitutes and they're going to lead you in bad paths. So that'll be interesting to get into, and we'll do that in right about the new year probably. So
sounds good.
Yeah, man. All right. Well, Merry Christmas. Good conversation. Good stuff, I think, fitting for the season, and hopefully we've given people some nuggets to chew on for the timing of Jesus' birth. Nothing conclusive particularly, but a lot of different paths to that. But again, most important thing is the celebration, of course, that that God became like a little child in a lowly place to become a servant to all, and just what incredible love he has to come into the world in that way, in such a humble way, for our sake, but also, as we've talked about, to reverse the sin of the rebellious angels. You know, it's not just about providing salvation to us, the opportunity for salvation, but it's undoing the works of the devil and his angels and demons, and making all things right and new.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Take care.
Sounds good.
Take care, brother.
Safe travels. Merry Christmas.
You too, man.
Talk to you later.
Bye bye. Thanks for listening to the Days of Noah podcast. We hope you've enjoyed this episode. Please be sure to like, leave a positive review, and share with your friends and family. God bless you, and we'll see you next week.